You're listening to Face Off, episode 13, recorded April 18th, 2009. Hey guys, Jade here from Face Off. Listen, while we were recording, something happened with Audacity, and we lost our primary recording, so this episode is our backup recording, which unfortunately is pretty terrible right now. We apologize for the quality. It kind of peaks out a lot. We hope you will bear with us with this. It was not on purpose, and we're trying to fix it so it doesn't ever happen again. All right, guys, here's the show. Face Off. You're listening to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
And in this podcast, we like to talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can view our show notes at faceoffshow.com or follow us via Twitter at twitter.com/faceoffshow. All right, Mark. I'm gonna try and warn all our listeners this week. We're kind of in a giant sick ward right now. Both Mark and I have pretty bad colds, and
I'm just getting over mine, and you're starting one.
Yeah. So we're really hoping that Mark and I have somehow the same illness, so that in a week or so he doesn't come down with what I have, and I don't start kicking up what he have. Because either way, they're not fun. But we actually got some brain tonics, so we're gonna try and use those to fire it up so that we don't start mumbling and being silly and,
we're going to do that anyways.
having a show full of mumbo jumbo, because we are not knuckleheads and we're trying to pump out quality content. But, between the Tylenol sinus and the brain tonic, I think I should be able to function. We'll see.
we'll do our best. Okay.
All right, so our first news and follow-up we want to talk about, we should have quite a few this week, so this is pretty exciting. In episode 10, we talked a little bit about Photoshop, but Mark, you and I actually made the statement that there was one thing that was really preventing me from moving over to GIMP, and it turns out that you have solved my problem. So what do we got, Mark?
Well, in episode 10, we talked about the Sumo Paint, wasn't it? Sumo Paint.
Yep.
And you had mentioned something about basically GIMP is only lacking the layer effects.
I said that was the big key for me to not thing. Switching over, is I wanted layer effects, blending effects.
What we found on Smashing Magazine, there's an article about handy tweaks to make GIMP replace Photoshop. And so I'm like, well, I've seen these a million times. What do we got here? I go through. They have a compatibility thing so you can install Photoshop brushes. That was all right. But The big thing that we had here was it installed layer styles. So you could do a drop shadow and basically everything Photoshop had with one click.
Yeah. And that's really exciting because as we talked about, Photoshop is pretty pricey. And I don't have a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And I like using open source projects anyway. So this might be the key to me trying to fully switch over to GIMP. I mean, when I'm doing images and stuff, especially when I'm in Linux, I just use GIMP anyways.
Right.
And there's other things like we talked about, Sumo Paint and whatnot. But I think this might be at least a really good foothold for me to finally step over and make 100% all my image editing in GIMP. So.
Yeah, I mean, if you're doing graphics for your profession, you're probably going to want to still stick with Photoshop, but if you're doing web design, there's no reason you have to use Photoshop.
Or, I mean, if you already paid for it, you might as well use it, but if you don't want to pirate it, you can try and use something like the game.
This was pretty exciting because this is one of the features that you said was one of the key things for you, and now that you've got it, you could probably use GIMP.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it honestly was. I just didn't want to have to take the time to when I wanted a drop shadow to copy the layer, change the opacity, blur it, color overlay it gray or black,
The article goes on to have a couple of different other things like CMYK color separation for if you're doing graphics for printing.
Mm-hmm.
Printing.
Good brushes.
Brush support basically for the Photoshop brush.
Anchoring the windows on the side. That's one of the goofy things about GIMP is it kind of has all these different windows that float around. You can anchor them and stuff. So pretty cool article. The link will be in the show notes. It's too long for us to spit out here over the air, but check it out. And especially if you're kind of on the fence, you might as well. I mean, that's the best part about the GIMP is it is open source. You might as well install this plugin for these effects. Try it out and see what you think.
Yeah. No. Yeah. There's also a GIMP shop that kind of changes the way the menus on GIMP to make it more Photoshop friendly, so you know where things are at.
Yeah. But that's another one. That's another way. I feel guilty taking GIMP and trying to make it like Photoshop because GIMP is not trying to be like Photoshop. They specifically don't want it to be. They don't want to be associated with the commercial product. They're their own thing. And so I feel kind of dirty and rude almost to try and take the GIMP and make it as much like Photoshop as possible. But then again, they also should understand that if people are able to do this, it will lessen the learning curve and bring more people over.
Yeah. So. Okay, so what do we got next?
All right, our next topic is, we've mentioned quite a bit, actually, user voice, almost to the point of insanity, because we notice it on a lot of websites when we're surfing around. There's, but what I did find out was some of the sites we thought were actually user voice is another product. They're two very similar products, and this one's called Get Satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot like user voice. Basically, you have feedback, and customers can make comments or report problems and stuff like that. But basically, I just wanted to let everybody know that in case someone was mad that we called Get Satisfaction user voice, there are two players in this category. And like, I know Ping.fm uses Get Satisfaction and not user voice.
And one thing I noticed right away is I've actually never, I didn't, this is the first time me opening their website. It's the first time me hearing about the Get Satisfaction part of it. This is, but I recognize their logo, actually. So that's they're doing something right about, as far as the branding.
Yeah.
Because I've seen that logo somewhere now that I associate it.
It's almost like kind of like one of those, it's almost like an old timey logo. It looks like,
mm-hmm.
like, ah, Bob, let's go down to the barbershop. And,
it's cool. I recognize it now, but so how does the features compare?
Feature to feature comparison, I can't say. Get Satisfaction seems maybe not quite so thorough. Like, user voice seems really advanced. Like, it's very structured. Get Satisfaction doesn't seem quite as much, but I honestly didn't dig into it too much. I just wanted to make sure that we clarified that
there's different
when
options.
When you see the feedback button on the side, it's not all user voice. There are other players in the game. And one thing you and I were talking about was we should implement something like Get Satisfaction or user voice on our blog website, because we wanted our listeners to make suggestions as to certain things that we could talk. Like, what do they want to hear us talk about? Because, mm-hmm. They're the listeners, and we want to, see what you guys want.
Also use Google Moderator for that.
Yeah, you could use Google Moderator, Get Satisfaction, user voice. So actually, when we kind of decide what we want to do, we should look at the various feature sets, and then maybe we could talk about on the show why we chose what we did and what we thought of each one. Okay. So that is Get Satisfaction. What do we got next, Mark?
We've got the Zamzar does text-to-speech.
Okay, so Zamzar is a web-based file conversion tool that we talked about in the past. And actually, some of the Zamzar guys, we shot out a tweet to them saying, hey, we talked about you on our podcast, whatnot. And they actually kind of gave us a heads up that they're going to have a new big feature coming through. And this is actually the announcement I saw on the internet randomly, is that they are now, one of their conversions that they allow you to do is to convert files to voice.
That's cool.
So upload a text file, upload a doc file, a PDF. And if it has text, like some PDFs, there's two kinds of styles that people do PDFs in. There's like the converted document where it's actually text and you can even highlight and copy mm-hmm. and paste it. And then there's sort of like the scanned image that they just throw into a PDF. Well, if it is actually text,
it can read it.
It will convert it and try and give it a file that an audio file that is basically a reading of the document.
So we talked about Google, Grand Central, Google, what's it, Google Voice now?
Yeah, they call it Google Voice.
They do, I guess the opposite,
the
right?
The opposite,
they're
yeah.
taking the voice and doing the text, okay.
Yeah.
But this is, you could throw up a PDF of an ebook or something and get it back as an MP3 or a WAV
AUG, WAV, MP3, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, basically they added it as another feature of their website. So you could almost convert anything to anything. If it makes sense, they'll try.
Mm-hmm.
But this actually, it's just like you upload a doc file and one of the things you can convert it to is MP3.
Looks like it has the ability to do text, PDF, Word, Works, WordPerfect, OpenOffice. So yeah, it's huge.
So it's just, you know, just another follow-up on something that we talked about, and I just thought it was really cool that they let us know that something was coming along, and then we found out about it later. Because sometimes when we talk about things in the show, it kind of seems like they just disappear into the mist and we never see them again. But Zamzar is alive and kicking. I hope that maybe they kind of listen to us a little bit about some of the thoughts that we had, and maybe they can, you know, because I like it. But like we said, when you go to it, it seems just a little ad heavy. It seems kind of like a little, you know, traditional web 1.0 advertising models. Things just aren't, you know, as smooth transitions and stuff like that. So hopefully they'll do that. But as far as the service itself, I think it's good.
Yeah.
So check it out. Zamzar now can convert your files to audio. So, all right. So what do we got next, Mark?
We've got something that's pretty interesting. We've talked about, the PayPal security keys for multi-factor authentication. We had a big podcast on that on, episode 7. And basically what it was is, multi-factor authentication, not to get into too big, you know, too much detail again, but it's a way to, even if somebody has your password, they still can't get in unless they have this device. You have to have both forms of authentication.
Yeah, exactly. Which traditionally meant you paid VeriSign, I think, what was it, like $20 or something like that?
$20 or $30 to get this PayPal.
For the little key. Or PayPal, you could pay $5 and get it.
Yeah, they're kind of subsidizing it. Or maybe they're just getting a huge volume discount. I don't know. And then now what we have is VeriSign has an iPhone app. You can actually have this VeriSign fob or multi-factor authentication device as actual software on the iPhone.
Yeah. So you can just download it. Right now, we were going to try and check it out, but Mark and I only have iPod Touches. Not iPhones, and apparently it only works on the iPhone,
which is kind of weird.
It seems silly, but I'm not sure why. Maybe because they want to control the network that this is. Maybe it actually does it over SMS, and the application just kind of covers it. I don't know, but
it could. Yeah,
we couldn't try it out, but from the screenshots, it's, you know, it's a lot like what we have now. It tells you the credential ID, which basically is on the back of your VeriSign fob, is on the back. It lets them know which unit you own. And then you click it to get your 6-digit security key, which changes every 30 seconds.
Awesome. So you don't have to pay the $5 or $30.
As long
as you already have the iPhone.
Yep. And so we talked about, there's other alternatives that we like the YubiKey and things like that. But at least this one has a couple big companies behind it. You got VeriSign, PayPal, and now they're trying to make it easier. So hopefully, just in general, we'll see a lot more places embracing multi-factor authentication. Even if they do it through this, which we think is, you know, kind of a clunkier way. Like, I think the YubiKey is a very elegant way to do this. But any multi-factor authentication is better than no multi-factor authentication.
Right.
And like we talked about the fact that World of Warcraft has multi-factor authentication. And, you know, 99% of the banks of the world's websites don't is just ridiculous.
Yeah, they do stuff like, here, you know, here's your little picture, and you have to select your picture on the way in and stuff, but it's not.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
You know, actually, let's talk about a little bit about ING. Does the image of, it does an image of characters on the screen, and you type your password with number, or is it the other way?
Oh, okay. So,
So
what we did is Mark and I signed up for some ING Direct savings accounts. And when you sign in, they ask you to pick your PIN. But so what they want you to do by default is they show a keypad online and you click the numbers that you want to put in your PIN. Mm-hmm. And this, of course, is to stop any keyloggers from, you know, if I type in my PIN, they could keylog it and get my PIN potentially for my savings account, which means they could withdraw money if they wanted to, which is not a good thing. And then, so Mark and I were trying it, and it didn't actually work in Firefox. And we're like, well, great. But there was this little button at the bottom that said, this doesn't work. And what they did was actually a really clever solution, is they showed the same numpad, but instead of clicking it, what they did is they associated random letters with each number.
Right.
So, like, if I wanted my PIN to be 1234, it was like QLCK. So that if it doesn't work in your browser and you can't click, you actually can still input your PIN, but a keylogger would just see.
Keylogger would have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, exactly.
The reason it wouldn't be is because every time you log in, it changes the way the numbers are associated with those letters.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a cool way. It's not really multi-factor authentication, but it kind of
it's forward helps. Thinking for a bank. I yes, mean, just a lot is. Of banks have really sort of stupid backends on it, and I and immediately when we logged on and it was like, well, it doesn't work in Firefox. We were both like, oh, great. Well, that's awesome. But then to see that this bank was actually thinking ahead and did that and it was a smart solution was really impressive. I was really happy about it. So, I mean, if you can call your bank and try and demand more, you know, stringent security measures for your online thing. I mean, you can get it now if you have an iPhone or iPod Touch. You can get this for free. You can get it from PayPal for $5, but something. I mean, it's just, it is absolutely silly that an online MMO game has more security than your online banking. That is ridiculous. And banks, I don't know if it's the bank or if it's the companies the banks are hiring to do their websites or whatnot, but they just have no clue, I think. I feel, you know.
I don't know about you, but I find the bank sites are somewhat clunky, too. They're not.
They're
well designed.
No, they're horrible. I mean, I use two different banks right now, and it's very frustrating to see how just ugly and functionally they're really difficult to get around. Like my one bank has in the menu it has business bill pay, but if you want to get to like a personal account bill pay, like if you're not a business paying for bill pay because you get free personal bill pay with your checking account, you have to like go three links deep and then find it, and it just is not good at all. I don't know. I'm not happy with it, but there's some big national banks that have really good websites. Like ING's was pretty good. Wells Fargo has a pretty decent interface, I'm told. But either way, these companies are not putting enough money into for a lot of consumers, one of the most important features of your banking.
Mm-hmm.
For my personal checking account, like if I'm not looking at, you know, how much interest I get or things like that with an account, the other thing I'm looking for is like things like ATM locations and their online banking features.
Mm-hmm. All right, we've got a Tweetree follow-up.
Yeah, okay. So I want to follow up on this because sometimes we talk about things, and like I said, they kind of drop into the mist and we don't go it up. But Tweetree is one of the things that we talked about, and I looked at it and I said, yeah, that's pretty cool. We'll feature it on the show. And then I didn't really touch it again for a long time. And we even had a response from some of the Tweetree guys. I felt bad because they were really active about getting a hold of us. And I honestly just at the time wasn't like, well, I just don't see for me the usefulness of this website to use every day. I was thinking sometime in the future, we should have an episode about the websites that we use every day. Just because there's a lot of them that you and I use and just be nice and fun. But I started slowly integrating this into my daily routine because what I found was, so random people would follow me, right? And so I go to their Twitter page and I see that they're replying to all kinds of stuff, right? So what do I do? Twitter's web interface, it's great, right? Mm-hmm. It says like, da, 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 in response to this. So I see the one person's message and I said, they're like, oh, that's really funny, in response to whatever. So I click on in response to whatever and it goes to the tweet that they're responding to. Very clunky, very annoying. So I started thinking about it because like I went to your Twitter page because any reply you get to someone I'm following, I see in my friend stream. But your replies to people I'm not following, I don't.
Right.
So once in a while, I'll just go to like, you know, twitter.com/MarkSandmore to see what else you're spitting out. Well, this is when I was like, this is exactly what Tweetree is for.
Mm-hmm.
I went to tweetree.com/MarkSandmore. And I can see what you're replying to, you know, or
for the people that you're not following.
That I'm not following without having to go to their page and going and do all the surfing around. It's just really quick. That's your tweets. I mean, all the ones that I normally see, but then, you know, your replies to someone else's stuff. And I get to see their post first and then what you're replying to them for. So I was really excited about that because, I just, like I said, I felt bad that I hadn't really found a use for it, and I didn't kind of see the aha moment until about a week ago.
So what is it about that particular feature that makes it, I mean, is it good for finding people you want to follow?
Yeah, or that just...
Or you just want to see what I'm
doing? Or just see what people are doing. I mean...
Because otherwise you don't get to see the replies.
Yeah, I mean, all I am is literally seeing their stuff. I have no... You know, someone could have tweeted, like... my grandmother died in the hospital today, and they reply, oh, haha, that's really funny. And, like, I don't see that they're being obnoxious unless I do that, you know, because I'm like, oh, okay, they're replying to someone's funny joke, you know. This way you kind of get to see the whole picture, like what they're replying to, why they're replying to it. And then again, like you said, maybe other interesting people that I could follow. I just think that if you ever go to someone's Twitter profile by themselves, instead of going to their Twitter profile, you should go to their Tweetree profile, because it's just a more in-depth view of that and gives you a better clue as to what they're doing.
Yeah, I'm looking at my own right now, and I would agree with that.
You know, totally. Like, if someone didn't know you and, like, they're like, you know, let's say you had your business card out or something that said, you know, at Mark Sanborn at Twitter, and if you just want to go see what they're, you know, what they're about, kind of what their latest tweets are, it's really clunky to go through the regular Twitter interface. But if you do through Tweetree, it's just a quick threaded view of what they're replying to, so that you don't have to take that extra step of going to someone else's thing and seeing what they replied to.
Now, I mean, we talked about this when we talked about Tweetree, but one of the, I mean, the way they are able to do this is Twitter keeps track of when you click the reply button on somebody's tweet.
Yep.
With that in mind, you have to kind of be careful, you know, to not use that as a shortcut to just replying to somebody for a new reply.
Yeah, that's exactly what we found out the other day was when I log into the Face Off Show Twitter thing, I look for companies that we talk about and I tweet them. Well, because in all honesty, because I was being really lazy, I would just go and click reply to their last tweet because I was just being lazy and didn't want to type their name into the reply thing. Well, if you look at Face Off Show and Tweetree, it looks like there is a really disconnected conversation going on. Yeah. Because I'm replying to some ridiculous tweets with nothing that relates to it at all. So
yeah, I'm seeing one on mine. You talked about ping.fm not doing your pictures or something. And I said, are you at home today?
Yeah.
Just because what I did is I took your last tweet that you did and I hit reply on it. Yeah. It was faster to do that than typing at Jay Robbins.
So. Yeah, exactly. So keep that in mind. But I honestly think that if you're going to go to the Twitter web interface to look at someone's profile, you might as well just go to Tweetree because it's just cleaner and easier.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree.
All right. So what do we got next? Let's talk about the dig bar. So this has kind of been a hot topic in the news the past couple of days. Why don't you give us a quick overview about the dig bar and why it's been kind of a controversy as of late?
Okay, so because of things like Twitter, we are using URLs. We only have 140 characters to say what we're doing. What's popped up as of late is, well, for a while now, but it's really popular now, is URL shorteners.
Yep.
There's probably 10 a day coming up. We talked about Cligs that, you know, added a little bit.
Trim. I think the first that I remember was Tiny URL.
Yeah. I think that one was around for years.
Yeah, it's been around for a while.
But they're really becoming popular because of the Twitter 140 character limit.
Yep.
Dig said, you know, let's get into that game too. As well as some, they actually have this. Okay, so what they do that for every article that's submitted to Dig, it's actually got a short URL automatically with this, what's called the dig bar. And what it is an iframe that has a dig up and down button, you know, the URL and.
Yeah, it has, at the top, it has sort of the, like the, you know, the dig it, the don't dig it. It tells you how many digs, it tells you how many comments.
Yeah.
It has like a similar stumble upon feature where you can just get a random article and it kind of sticks in that iframe. All kinds of goofy things. So, and Dig, you know, they were really planning this for a long time. They're really excited about it. Cause it, what it does is it basically brings Dig, it gives you Dig features on the website that was dug.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of just clicking a link and getting a blank link up to their previous article, now you actually have some of the Dig stuff you can have on it. Like you can see related sites, you can actually, you know, Facebook it or tweet it in one spot. I guess functionally, I see how really helpful this is.
Yes,
so
for a user, this looks awesome. Okay.
So what's the uproar?
The uproar is, number one, not necessarily the bar itself for number one, is the SEO problems associated with short URLs. We have talked about in the past about duplicate content. If you have the same content on multiple URLs, Google will penalize you and your page rank and your search indexability for that content will go down.
Okay.
So to explain that in other words, the more, if you have a dig URL that is duplicate. You're duplicating all of your content, your entire website, or for that article that's pointing for the dig bar is pointing to, mm-hmm. is duplicate. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if you're using Dig, TinyURL, whatever. As long, I mean, if they're not doing 301 redirects, it is duplicate content.
Okay, so a 301 gets you around that.
301 is a proper way to do it. Now, Dig can't do a 301 because they're also using an iframe and they're capturing your page on their page.
Yeah, they don't want to send you onto the actual page. That's why they implemented the Dig bar. So they want you to have the Dig stuff on that page as right. well.
In a way, the dig.com URL, the entire page is about 20 pixels long at the top of your bar. It says the Dig bar. And then it uses what's called an iframe to display your page.
Yeah.
So it's like going and getting your page and putting it on the Dig page. So it's almost like they're stealing your content and they're getting credit for their URL. Yeah. URL.
So Dig is big. Dig's been around. It gets a lot of search results. So here's like potential situation that you and I talked about earlier. I'm Little Jade Robbins on my jaderobbins.com blog. I write this really cool article that I'm really proud of. I have like a page rank of 1. Nothing great, right? So Dig comes along the way they were doing it, and someone submits my stuff to Dig. Mm-hmm. So then Google runs over it, and they say, oh, here's content on dig.com that says this, right? Mm-hmm. Dig page rank of like, what, 8? They're way up there, right?
Yeah, 8 or 9.
8 or 9. Okay, so they Probably. Say, here's Dig's content. Oh, this little PageRank 1 guy has the same content as Dig.
Right.
I mean, I'm not going to get the search results at all for that, or I'm not going to get any of the clout for having that at all, because it says Big Dig has that content and Little Jade is copying it.
Right.
Okay. That.
So that's I guess that was a couple of them rolled into one. But the first one I wanted to make the point was the SEO, the search engine problems, yep. the duplicate content problems. That is the first negative thing. This is the first point.
Hitch about it.
The second point is that Dig is using what's called an iframe. These were back in the 90s. They were popular and they were almost like a web virus. I mean, every site wanted to put them on there and kind of what it got so bad that everybody installed these like iframe blockers.
Well, it was a way back in the day to get a consistent style across your whole website with very little programming. So before, I mean, there were scripting languages, but they weren't as easy to use or as universally available as like PHP or ASP.NET is now. So what you used to do is the easiest way to keep sort of a consistent style, like the consistent menu header and stuff on your web page, was to put your header and your menu in an iframe, and then those links on your menu were directed towards the middle frame.
I think you're thinking of a frame set. A little okay. So and then okay. So yeah, it's pretty much the same. Okay, I know what you're saying. So.
Yeah, same thing. It's sort of the same concept, right? Okay. There's like something that's stuck somewhere else and everything else scrolls inside of it like its own miniature window.
They try to keep opening pages inside their website. And so they would, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I did it before I learned how to do SHTML, which was like a... But you, that's when you, that was like the first sort of implementation, the first easy implementation of an include. So then I could create like a header template and a menu template and include them in HTML and it would sort of render it for you. But it was kind of, I think that's why, and I mean, a lot of big websites didn't do this anyways because they had people paying to do it right. But it was really a lot of the smaller guys, small companies and stuff were using these a lot.
Here's the problem with it back then, though, was you could have a small frame at the top, like Dig Bar's doing now,
yeah.
and have your little site with your little links or ads or whatever, and then whenever somebody clicks on a link to go somewhere else, it just opens below that bar.
Yeah.
And so your bar is taking over every single website that person views after that.
Yeah, and that's why... webmasters back in the day got used to sort of putting in all your links, you would say target equals underscore top because then it would cut out all the frames and put it in the top.
Yeah. And so that's the other thing they're saying. This is bad technology that they're trying to bring back. And this is the public. It's more of a publisher side. The users are not complaining too much. It's the publisher saying, this is my website. If you're going to link to it and do all this stuff, you're not going to, and you're going to get my content, you're going to get it displayed the way I want it displayed. I don't want a dig bar at the top of it ever.
Yeah.
If you want to do that, they suggest using something like a Firefox extension or something, yeah, something that's built into the browser. Don't use iframes.
Yep. Exactly.
Now in Dig's defense, I'm reading an article here that Dig has actually fixed kind of the SEO problem with it. And they're not using 301 redirects because they can't.
Yeah.
Because they're actually using iframes. They're taking like we just described, I guess.
Yeah.
So they have to use the link rel canonical that we talked about earlier.
Yeah, in episode 7. Yep.
In episode 7.
I thought it was. I don't know.
Yeah, but episode 7 with the Matt Cutts video.
Yeah, exactly. Where they talked about Google, MSN, and Yahoo accepting this link rel equals canonical.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what this does now. Google looks at dig.com/... short URL, right? And inside that page, they say that the canonical URL, the actual home of this content is your address.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of saying like, you know how we talked before, like Boria would be like, you know, Big Dig has this content and Little J doesn't, so Big Dig is the winner. Here, Big Dig is saying, no, this, you know, this is just another address for the same content, so it's not duplicate. Don't penalize him.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives kind of the power back to me. It's Dig recognizing that my address is where that content lives.
So if we were to assume that the SEO is taken care of, do you still like it? I mean, there's still an up. See, what I'm reading here is that there's still uproars because of the fact that publishers don't have any control over what Dig Bar does at the top. I mean, Dig could potentially implement ads over mm-hmm. top of your content.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then again, if you're going to Dig, you know that anyways. You know, it's. I don't feel like Dig is trying to take over my content. I feel like the users visiting Dig are allowing Dig to put some stuff at the top of their browser, not my content. You know what I'm saying? It's, you know, it's not really intrusive, I don't think, personally. I don't, you know, if people like my content, see, Dig is a fickle crowd, man. They Dig hardly ever, I mean, you've seen it. It does not bring sustained traffic. People look at it once and then they quit.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if people at Dig are willing to accept the Dig Bar when they look at other people's content, that's fine. They're not the type of people that I want to attract anyways to my content. I want sustainable traffic. I want people that are enjoying my product, not just, you know, a bunch of looky-loos kind of.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and if you're a Dig, you're kind of used to that. You're accepting that anyways, that you're just looking at this site. There's going to be a Dig Bar at the top. Now, before, when it was screwing up SEO, yeah, I was not cool with that because that has outside of Dig implications for my content.
Right.
But if they have the canonical URL, it really doesn't. It doesn't affect me that much. What do you think? You look very, very skeptical.
I would agree. I mean, the SEO problem is my major concern, and I think they have to work that out, or they cannot use this Dig Bar.
Yeah, exactly.
They're going to have so many problems.
And
it looks like they have actually worked that out, according to this article. There's still heat on this, so I don't think everything is taken care of. I'm not really a fan of the bar. I would never use that bar, personally. Like, I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't like...
What I would like to see them implement is a way for content producers to put themselves on a blacklist where, I mean, there is already code out there to block the Dig Bar on your site, but that's pretty heavy handed. Like, I don't want to have to put that in my template just to block the Dig Bar. It'd be nice if Dig made a way, you know, almost like this is Google Webmaster Tools did the perfect way of doing this. Like, if you want to submit your site to Webmaster Tools, they tell you to create a file with like a random file name and it checks to see if it's there. I would like to do that so that as like a website owner, you can go to Dig, verify that you're the owner of that URL, And then, and from there, you can control how things happen from for things submitted to your URL.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't. And I also wanted to mention that, you know, bigger, big, huge sites, you know, are blocking the dig bars, not just little guys like me and you. Engadget has blocked the dig bar.
Yeah.
And we're gonna link a link to that too, as of why they did that. But it's basically the reasons we're talking about now. They want to be in control of their publishing. They don't want to use the SEO problems. They don't, you know, they don't like iframes. So
yeah, I looking at this sort of Engadget article, one thing they did kind of mention is that having the tiny URL at the top really, really lets you lose a lot of your advertising, and that makes sense too. A lot of your advertising is your URL. I mean, you are marksanborn.net. Mm-hmm. I am jaderobbins.com. This is faceoffshow.com. It's not dig/random characters.
True.
And that's one of the big reasons that Engadget did is they said, no, I mean, you need to take control. This is yours. And that makes sense. And that's why I said, like, I think, like me personally, I would probably leave it on because if I can make the dig experience easier for people,
right?
Why not? But some of these bigger sites that have a lot of branding and stuff like that, I would totally understand why they would block that because, you know, they're really trying to take ownership of their content. You know, they're, I mean, right now we're not, you and I aren't really trying to sell books. We're not, you know, fired up about copyrights, you know, to our content. I mean, we try and own it the best we can, but we're more concerned with getting it out right now rather than saying, you know, we retain ownership. So, I see really both sides of each coin, and that's why I think it'd be better if Dig implemented some, webmaster tools like Google that would allow you to kind of choose how things happen like that.
Yeah, it's important to point out too that like URL services like Owly, Bitly, short URL or tiny URL, they actually redirect. They don't keep the URL up in the bar.
Yeah, exactly.
And use an iframe like Dig is doing. This is the first URL that's doing URL shortener service is doing this.
Yeah,
and this is why Engadget was one of the reasons why Engadget does not like the way that Dig Bar is implementing that.
Well, so in that Matt, here's another one though. But in that Matt Cutts video, he was talking about the way some browsers will end up handling this rel canonical.
Okay,
and one of the things I think he said, I really hope I don't misquote him on this, was that some browsers would redirect you to the canonical URL, which
automatically.
Is automatically, which then would get rid of the dig bar in this instance if they did. But some also will just display the canonical URL in the address bar as opposed to actually refer. So there, that would be like a solution where you would get the dig bar, you would have the dig functionality, and it opens all bigger can of worms.
Huge security problems.
Well,
if. Because if you're in your browser and you think you're at this URL but you're not,
maybe at the last part I didn't hear about.
I could see it redirecting to the actual canonical. That would make sense.
Yeah,
I would. Yeah, that would make total sense.
Or
which would but the problem with that is the dig bar is gone if they did that.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't solve any problems. But then again, it puts the power in the user. So a user. It's like kind of a balance between user power and the content provider's power because as a content provider, Engadget does not want the dig bar in any way, shape, or form. They're right. saying, I don't care what the dig users want. I don't want it on my content. I don't want you slapping your junk at the top of my page that is not mine at all. So get it out of here.
Exactly.
And I understand that because it's their content, it's their website, and someone is sort of taking their way. I mean, In a sense, by putting their URL up top, Dig is stealing their content and saying this is Dig's content.
Right.
You know,
for someone that's not, technical with the iframe, basically what Dig is doing is they're making a website that takes all of your content. It's like copying and pasting.
Yeah.
So I'm going to make it real simple. It's like copying and pasting your content into their website.
Yeah.
Their page.
Exactly.
You're not at the original author's page anymore.
Yeah.
And that is why they're upset about that.
Yeah. And so it's a difficult, it's an interesting experiment, because, dig users want this, because it makes the dig experience cool. But content providers don't.
I was actually really surprised as much heat as it got because Dig has had a very prestigious, reputation.
Yeah. Well, they are. I mean, it's kind of funny. They must not have really thought it well or thought it through well enough because They were, it was like, I feel bad for the guys that dig a little bit because they were pumped about this. I mean, you heard like Kevin Rose and those guys talking about something big coming out. They were pumped about this. And it came out and there's like this, oh, cool. And then immediately there's like this, nuh-uh, and this huge backlash, you know. And like, I feel bad for, because we've done this before with like contract web work, you know, you put your heart and soul into something and you think it's so great and you can't wait to show someone. And you show them and they're just like, yeah, that's okay.
Or yeah.
And you're just heartbroken. You're like, oh, man. So I feel bad. I don't know. The other problem, you know, that kind of has come out in the news, and I'm not sure, I'm not, again, as educated in this as I should be if I'm going to bring it up for the show, but I'm going to do it anyways. Word is that the rel tag is not XHTML compliant, correct?
The canonical one?
Yeah.
That's what I've heard.
So, I mean, that brings out a whole nother can of worms in that, you know, their problem to solve. So let's say I'm big XHTML strict guy. And Dig is basically making any website submitted to them non-compliant by putting the rel canonical in there.
Well, it's actually technically Dig's page still. So Dig is being the one that's not.
Yeah, but there is your content. I mean, if at the bottom of my website, I've worked hours and hours and hours to make my stuff compliant, and I have my little stamp at the bottom that says I'm XHTML1 compliant.
It'll still turn compliant. It'll still be compliant. Your site will still be.
Your site will be, but I look like a liar because technically, if you took that Dig page with the rel canonical,
the Dig page is not compliant. Your
I know, is. But see, again, it's they're stealing your content, taking what you have put your heart and soul into, slapping the Dig logo on it,
and that's why Engadget's mad is because. See, to the average user, it looks like you're on Engadget's site. You're actually not on Engadget's site. You're on Dig's site. And what you just described is Dig, yeah, like Dig just made it look like your page is not XHTML compliant anymore.
Yeah.
Which it's still, your page actually is
yeah.
The problem is Dig is taking your page and copying and pasting it into their non-compliant page.
You know, whereas if they did a 301.
But then if they did a 301, they couldn't do the bar.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, if they did a 301... Yeah, this is a slippery slope. I don't know. I honestly did not expect this kind of troubles and backlash.
From I did not. Like no, this, I did not at all either.
It has had people in an uproar. And I honestly, like just from our discussion right here, we can see that it, I mean, it's
there's some implications. There's some thinking to do.
There's a lot of angles to this, and it's going to take some work to figure it
out.
The
other thing is, if Dig does this, who's next? What else are we going to see? How many other iframes are we going to see? I had a guy.
Ali?
I had a guy, Ali does it now. I had a guy message me on Twitter, said, review this short URL thing. And it was it was awful. It took an iframe to a whole nother level. It had three iframes.
Oh.
One of the iframes was half the size of the page. It was terrible. But I mean, I could see this going back to the 90s, history repeating
again,
itself.
Yeah. Dig is saying that this is okay. And if it does kind of survive the storm, it's saying that. Well, another thing is it's saying that a company with enough traffic and sort of, you know, a big enough page rank and whatnot and enough followers can do whatever they want. And that's not fair. You know, I don't know. I honestly, I don't know which side of the fence I'm on. It's going to take some hard thinking because you've definitely opened up some thought threads in my head right now that I'm going to have to sort through, so...
Well, should we move to the next?
Let's
get off
that.
the dig bar.
All right, so let's talk some web apps, Mark. What first web app I want to talk about is called Meeting24.tv. So what this is a website. It's a way to sort of hold a meeting with video conferencing on the web. You know, this is really funny because you and I have seen a similar technology to this a long time ago. It was in like a sort of beta test phase that one of the forums we browsed found. And you could basically post a link up to it and people, it tries to access your camera and your microphone via Flash. And there's like, you know, 12 people. You can have like up to 12 people video conferencing. This I think this might have either been that company or whatever or the technology that was taken from a beta test because it's a lot like it. It's currently done. It's in a public beta. it's done by a Japanese company who really needs to work on their translation, because one of the things is, if you're you YOU'RE a free, if you are a free account, I guess that makes sense, you can use your meeting room for 24 hours after crating it. Crating. So I'm going to make a meeting right now. I'm going to call it Jaders. And then, so with basically with the free account is for up to 24 hours, your meeting is, can kind of be, it can exist. You send people the link. Let me actually, I'm going to see.
If you use your browser in English, all texts convert to, or convert in English automatically.
Yeah. So if you get, I just sent you the link. Oh, goodness. No, that was the wrong link. 2 seconds.
But hey, if they have a good service, we don't care about their English.
No, I don't really care about it at all. Right now, the quality is
they'll get that taken care of.
Wow, this is interesting. I think they have, so if you have a free account, one of the constant people in your meeting is a commercial channel.
That's innovative.
That's kind very of. Innovative. I did not expect that at all.
That's,
and it just disappeared. So, wow, that's really interesting. Okay, let me send you the link here, Mark, and I'll let you connect to it. And so
they got a nice website. Looking, I mean, they got, it looks okay. How's the interface? I guess. Are you looking at me right now?
I mean, it's really simple. It's just, you know, people in their chat room. You can see their face. You can do audio. You can mute your video or your audio, and you know, talk to each other. It's really, really simple. It's identical to sort of that thing that we had used before, but I always wondered why this hadn't been around. I was really kind of like, why hasn't someone done this yet? Like, even Google Talks video, or like the Google Chat video in Gmail, it requires a special plugin and doesn't just use the native Flash thing. And I was always really frustrated with that, because it seems silly to do that. So I can see that you just joined my meeting. Right now you don't have a camera, but you know, it just, as more people show up, it kind of tiles out. And you know, I think being that they have it's free right now in a beta, it'd be a great way to hold a meeting over the internet, so that you don't have to bring everybody into a local room without buying something like GoToMeeting or anything like that. I mean, it's really no frills. It's just your camera and your audio. It doesn't do things like desktop sharing or anything like that. But you could do that on your side if you wanted to. You could get, you know, a camera driver that just shares your desktop or something like that. But
yeah, there's tons of those.
If you just need to spit out video and audio to people for a meeting, here you go. Give them this URL. If you buy a premium account, you can like privatize your meeting. Like right now, if this meeting URL got out somehow, we could not stop people from joining.
I put my name in, but it's not showing. It still shows guests. Maybe it's because I'm not signed, like a registered user.
Did you hit enter?
Yes.
You didn't hit enter.
I guess I didn't enter. Anyways, this is cool. I mean, it uses Flash. I did see the ad, but the ad's gone now.
Yeah.
The one thing I noticed was it was a Japanese ad, and so I don't read Japanese, and that doesn't help.
Oh, well, that's their fault.
Well, but if they're listening, they need to work on that too. But this is cool. This is like the one you described that we used earlier.
Yeah.
How many does it support? Six or seven?
I didn't see anything when I looked on it, to be honest with you, but
I mean, it looks like it's scaling, because when I first came in, there's three boxes at least, and then it slid over to do the two. So I think it could do quite a bit.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just sort of the limitations of technology. But I thought about
Does Ustream do this kind of? But it's only in one window,
two
though,
people.
Right?
Yeah, it's one window. You can have two people. I can invite a co-host. They have to have a Ustream account.
But then it's still only one small window, and you're split screened, right?
Yeah.
Are you even a smaller
it's
screen?
It's much smaller. Here, this is not like a show and co-hosts. It's not like that. We're all equals in here video chatting. I mean, like when we used to do it in that forum, that was the fun of it, is you could just send the link out. People can join randomly as they want and spit out audio and video.
Dude, we had, what, like six people or something in there?
I think we had up to 8 or 9, and it was fun because you get that many people in there, especially, you know, we would do it at like 3 o'clock at night on a weekend. It was silly and just fun, but I mean, I was looking at this because at work, we run a bunch of different operating systems. There's no way I could get people to at work to pay for something like this because it's totally a convenience. But I thought, you know, maybe on one of those days when I'm working at home, you know, I was trying to think of ways to do this. I was like, well, we can use iChat, being I have a Mac at home, maybe Google Video, but that's there's only like two people there. You know, iChat, you can have up to three. What if I just had like, I wanted to just video conference with four people really quick, even while they're sitting at their desk, because where I work is one building. I have coworkers who work on the same campus, but in a different building. But I just want to get, you know, I don't want to have to type it out in chat really quick, and I don't really want to call on the phone. I just want to do something like this really quick. This is like a perfect solution to that, because even it's right now it's free. I literally just send you the link. You don't have to sign up for anything.
No.
And boop, there you are, and you can have a meeting really quick and talk stuff out.
Is so we had the one that is when you said this was the first one you've seen kind of in a while, or you haven't seen a lot of people. Is that the free ones, or I mean, does GoToMeeting do this kind of thing?
Most of those require clients. Like the host has to have a special client.
And is those
proprietary
are
things?
Okay. You can't just join on a URL. It's not a web app.
Yeah,
like this.
And you got to pay. I mean, that was a big thing. Like I said, I couldn't convince people at work to pay for something like that, because right. they would say, well, get up off your butt and walk over to their office or something, you know, like you can't get them to pay for that. So this is just kind of a quick, you know, quick way to just to do it for without any money. Right now it's free because it's in a beta. I think, especially with the ad, they'll probably keep the free version up for a while, but it's totally Flash-based. You don't have to install anything special besides Flash. You just, you know, like other Flash things like Ustream and stuff, you just say, yeah, you can have access to my camera and my microphone. And there you go. And you can have more than, you know, two people. Like in, you know, the Google one, you can only have two people. It requires a special browser plugin. It's not the greatest quality. You can see I don't look, you know, it looks pretty condensed and pixelated. But that's all you
doesn't
need. You don't need a whole lot.
Stream.
That does. What are you talking about?
It's the same as Ustream to me.
Really?
Hmm. On my screen.
But
I don't have a big fancy Mac monitor over there. I have your little laptop over here.
I'm sorry. It looks nice, huh? But you know, just a quick, cheap, easy way to do it. I remember when we did it on that old one. I spent years trying to find that link again for that because at the time it was some company working on it, and I think they honestly just left kind of a hanger link out there and forgot about it. So because people could use this for free all the time, and it was really goofy. And I've been trying to find that for ages, and finally I did, and it's a company doing it. So. I'm pretty pumped about it. I think I'm going to try and use this in the upcoming weeks just for when people are disconnected in various areas and we need to talk about something really quick. Or like, let's say you're having a meeting with a bunch of people and you have a projector with a computer and one person is missing from the meeting, just give them a URL and then they can see everyone at the meeting, and then everyone at the meeting can see them and they can share audio really easily.
Cool.
So, yeah, I was really excited to find that because I remember we had played around with that a long time ago, and I was trying to find what company created a commercial product from that service. So I was really excited about it.
All right, so the next app we got here.
All right.
Alternative2.net.
Yeah, so some of the fun websites we actually talked about was
the one was Open With,
and then the other one was, I can't remember it, but sort of this file system and what do you use to open it? What does a file mean and what do you use to open it? Well, Alternative 2 is kind of like that in that you can go look at popular programs and find alternates to using them in different operating systems.
Okay.
So if you go to the alternative2.net's website, the most popular one with the most views is Adobe Photoshop. So, you know, it says it's a commercial product by Adobe. It's on Mac and Windows. It gives you a little explanation about it, and you can even go to the website. But then you say, find an alternative to Adobe Photoshop, and it takes you to the Alternative 2 page. And there they have a whole bunch of alternatives that are ordered by the number of people that like them. So from here you can see, you know.
This is like a social dig style. Like,
yeah.
I see here. You can actually vote them up, maybe?
Yeah, so yeah. The number one replacement for Photoshop or alternative to Photoshop is the GIMP. And you know, there's the GIMP. It's sort of the same thing before. It says open source by the GIMP Software Foundation. It's Mac, Linux, Windows. It tells you about it. I can even find an alternative to GIMP, right, from one click right there if I wanted to. The next
underneath that, there's paint.net.
Paint.net, which is only in Windows. Pixlr, which is an that's something we should check out.
It's like web Sumo, we should check that out. It's like a Sumo paint competitor or something.
Yeah, and so it's like the one that we talked about that gave you links to like free or open source stuff to open a file, except for this is just a general alternative site. I know a lot of the most popular Linux articles out there are like, what's a Linux alternative to this program? Yeah. What's a Linux alternative? And, you know, like, as we talked about, like, a GIMP is not a perfect replacement for Adobe Photoshop. But there you can see that most people say that, you know, if you want to replace the feature set of Photoshop, use the GIMP.
This is also interesting. It's got Adobe Fireworks down here. A lot of people don't need Photoshop unless you're in the business to do doing graphics design. Fireworks can do a lot of web design.
The biz, as I call it. Yeah. If you're in the biz.
I think Fireworks is a considerably cheaper, in a more or less expensive version of Photoshop for different needs. So that's cool too.
And they're all, I mean, at the top that you can tag each program, like Photoshop is tagged with, is, you know, image, photos, Adobe, graphic, image editor, photo.
Yeah, it looks like I'm looking at the top. It says you can, like, Linux. You click on Linux. I'm looking for Linux software. I'm on a Linux operating system. I don't want to see anything that's not going to work on my operating system. So that's cool too.
Yep.
You go in there and you see Nero. A lot of people use Nero to burn CDs. I want to see an alternative. I'm going to vote for K3B. And
actually, yep,
that's what it is at the top, K3B.
But according to this, Nero burning ROM is in Linux.
It's not very good.
Really?
Yeah, I've used it. First of all, you have to pay for it. I used a demo and to check it out, and it was terrible when I checked it out. That was at least a year and a half ago. So they might have vastly improved it. But when I checked it out, it was nothing like the Windows one. Like, it was basically take the basic GNOME one, like the basic the most basic CD burning software suite for Linux you could think of. And it was marginally better than that. It's not like K3B is very, very, I mean, it's very mature. It's been around forever.
I mean, here, this is a great way to look at it. You know, there is Adobe Reader for Linux, Adobe Acrobat Reader, you know.
Which I don't like.
That's great. Yeah, exactly. So, boom, I find alternatives to it, and 55 people like Foxit Reader. So right there, there's like, okay, well, I want to get rid of this heavyweight Adobe application in Linux. It doesn't even have to be, you know.
Wow, I didn't know there was a Foxit Reader for Linux. I use that Evince or whatever.
Evince?
That's the one that comes with it.
I can guarantee you we'll probably see a couple more future episodes where we're getting some awesome online apps, which is a category at the top.
That's interesting. That I mean, that was like according to the users that voted, the Foxit Reader for Linux is like huge compared to Evince.
Yeah. I think a lot of people. Well, then again, too, I don't know if it is comparing them directly. Like, if it's saying, you know, Foxit Reader for Linux is better than Foxit Reader than Adobe Reader for Linux. It could just be that 55 people like Foxit Reader.
Foxit Reader for Linux.
Yeah, it's just sort of by the number of people that like them. So you could go through and like any application that you like and think should support, you know, say you like it and it's not perfect, but it gives you good alternatives to it.
I personally haven't had any problems with the events, so.
Well, aren't you special?
Well, I mean, not enough to. Not like Adobe Reader is slow and laggy all this other stuff. Let's put it this way. I've never had to go look for a reader for Linux. Any distribution I've ever had has come with a great one. And it's usually in Evince or whatever.
Another interesting thing I want to point out about this site is if you look at the far left, there's kind of these little blue feathers on the side.
Uh-huh.
You should click on those.
Does that get satisfaction?
No. Actually this... this silly little blue bird that slides out that is
Twitter
telling them to follow you on Twitter. That is some clever. I mean, I'm weird. I have to click on things. I just noticed there was these little blue things on the side, and I was like, "What are those?"
I'm sorry. Yahoo has an instant messenger for Linux.
Is it the online one? I don't know. Maybe you should look.
I don't use Yahoo Messenger, but I'm curious. It's weird. This is cool. I'm going to have to check this out some more.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really bad about finding good applications. I've said this before. I'm a terrible searcher. I don't know what to search for or how to get good search keywords to find what I want online. So I tend to lean on people like you a lot, you know, or like, hey, you know, or I'll hear whispers of a cool program that someone talks about. And I'm like, oh, I should check that out. And I find out that everyone's been using it for years and I had no idea because I'm a putz. Mm-hmm. No more, Mark, because I have alternative2.net.
In Linux articles and things that I write, it's always like... Windows, you know, I kind of keep this in mind. You know, Windows users are coming to Linux, and they have these certain apps, and they need to find the same apps or an equivalent to those apps in Linux. And this kind of site is great for that.
Yeah, and the fact that you can just go by category too.
Right. I mean, because I mean, I can write an article and say, hey, if you've got Photoshop, you should use this. If you've got Internet Explorer, you should probably get Firefox. If you want this, you know. But I can't get them all. This site is going to have, you know, more than I can come up with.
So. Well, and it's dynamic. I mean, if something new comes out that's better, or all of a sudden, like, let's say, you know, there's some really crappy out there PDF reader for Linux that is really junky. And then, you know, 2 days later, they release a new version with a lot of great features. Well, more people can like that now, and then you'll be okay. Because they, you know, it can get bumped back up. Mm-hmm. All right, Mark. Well, that about wraps it up for this episode of Face Off Show. I'd like to remind all our viewers you can subscribe to our show at faceoffshow.com/feed. If you have comments or suggestions, you can email us at studio@faceoffshow.com. Reply to us on Twitter or leave a comment on our show website. We'd love to hear from anybody. Anything from like what you'd like to talk about, or if we get something wrong, please be sure to correct us because we don't want to be in the business of spreading bad information.
No.
So thank you guys, and we'll see you next week.